Welcome to Stargate SG-1 for the first time. Still, not a Star Trek podcast. My name is Jeff Aiken, and I'm watching Stargate SG-1 for the first time.
And I'm Brent Allen, and I'm also watching Stargate SG-1 for the 47th time. But for the first time, I'm going to be looking for those sci-fi messages. You know, those messages that hold up a mirror to society. I'm looking for what this episode's trying to tell us about how to be better human beings to each other, or is it going to give us hope that we can be better in the future? Now, we are doing something a bit different.
We are.
Again.
Different from last time we did it differently.
It is different from last time we did it, although a little more in the vein. If you guys were with us last week, then you know that Jeff flew all the way across the country. He's hanging out with me here. We're going to batch record a handful of these episodes.
Yeah, get some
we're in. A little asynchronous with this show, and that's okay.
So if you're listening to the audio podcast of this, finish listening to that. But you got to see what we're doing here. It's pretty darn cool. Head over to YouTube or the Patreon and then watch it on top of just listening to this thing. All right, listen, we're watching Hathor this week. I made a prediction.
Yes.
That this is going to be Stargate's episode on Beowulf. But I'm pretty sure Hathor is Egyptian now that I've thought about it.
Okay.
But I don't know that for sure.
Okay. What if you say Egyptian, what about Egyptian? Like, what do you mean?
Like Hathor is some character in like the old Walk Like an Egyptian days.
All right. Hathor was a cast member on the Bangles.
Yeah.
Music video.
The one who did this. Dads, once again, and some moms out there, you know what I'm talking about.
What you actually don't realize is Hathor was a discarded character from the McDonald's gang. Oh. Like you had Grimace and the Hamburglar and Ronald and Hathor.
Okay.
And she didn't make the cut.
Didn't do it. Yeah. They got Birdie in
Fry Guy. Birdie. Yeah. No. Yeah. Fry Guys. So anyway, yeah, this episode is Hathor. Episode 14. Original air date was 1 week after last week's episode. So they're pumping them out pretty good. October 24th, 1997. If you guys are just joining us for the first time, welcome. What's about to happen? It, just so you know, is Jeff and I are going to watch this episode right now. We're gonna do it right now. And if you're watching this on Patreon, you're gonna get to watch the whole unedited thing. If you're watching us on YouTube, copyright stuff and all that, we gotta cut it up on Patreon. There's we try to stay compliant with everything.
Yeah.
But the way YouTube. So we'll cut it up and yeah, we're gonna do that right now. If you want to go check out that unedited deal, go over to patreon.com/Babylon5. First, I know that sounds weird, but just go with me on that. And if that doesn't work, check the link in below, and that'll have the right URL to it in case we change it later.
If you're not watching us and you're listening to us on a podcatcher, you're going to have a little jump. Like we're talking about this, and here in about a minute, we're going to be on the back end having just watched the episode. And once that happens, I'm going to share my first time reactions, and Brent's going to tackle any of those sci-fi messages that may or may not have been in the episodes. So Brent, unless you have any objections, let's do this.
I have none.
Excellent.
I concur.
Chevron 7 locked.
A couple of Indiana Jones wannabes bust into an old Mayan pyramid that has an Egyptian sarcophagus in it? And not only are there hieroglyphics depicting the goddess Hathor, the Egyptian goddess of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but Hathor herself is in there too. And the second she opens her mouth, we know she's Goa'uld. Sadly, the archaeologists don't have long to ponder that as she hand blasts them to death. She ends up at the SGC and thanks Daniel for his kindness by blowing some sparkly purple gas or mist or something like that on his hand. Not to be rude, she gives the one with a crown of marble, General Hammond, a little of that purple mist too. She wants to know where Ra is. Now we all know that he got blowed up by Kurt Russell, and when Daniel shares that with Hathor, she gets all kinds of excited. So excited that Daniel gets a full-on purple gas kiss right on the lips. After that, he tries to explain to O'Neill and Hammond that she's a good Goa'uld and might even help kill Apophis. Tilk and Sam don't buy into this at all, Tilk saying he's never met a good Goa'uld. But Daniel stares at Hammond with purple eyes as he invites her into the briefing. And after showing that she's not one to leave anyone out, she purple mists Jack and Teal'c. Doesn't have any effect on Teal'c, though. Sam doesn't get any love. The dudes all leave to give Hathor a tour, and she and Daniel end up alone. She says she wants him to be her pharaoh. Daniel not only agrees, but he says that he will die for her. Now, Sam's pretty miffed that she's not getting any attention, so she hits up the Excite search engine on her Netscape Navigator browser and learns that all of the sex goddesses, you know, Aphrodite, Ishtar, and others, were probably this same Goa'uld. Doc Fraser sees this too and decides they need to take this gal down. They figure out the purple mist is hormonal and only affects men. So the women suit up, they get armed. They, along with Teal'c, they're going after her. Stuff starts ramping up pretty quickly. Hathor, you see, is a Goa'uld queen. Her whole thing is creating and birthing all kinds of Goa'ulds. In this case, with Daniel's, with Daniel's DNA. She gives all of us the universal sign of getting it on as she takes Daniel's glasses off. And, we're getting more Goa'ulds. Sam and crew find a spent Dr. Jackson, and then they find Hathor chilling out in a hot tub thingy in the locker room. All the dudes come to her protection, and they end up locking up all the women. Powerless and understanding the nature of the mist, Fraser recommends they use a different kind of weapon. Lean into that horny hormone and flirt with the dudes. This gets them out of lockup and takes a bunch of the guys off the field. Unfortunately, one of those guys is getting some special attention from Hathor. Yeah, you know our hero, Jack O'Neill? Well, after rubbing some weird belly light on him, she's made him Jaffa. He's got the X-pouch and everything. A little later on, Sam, Fraser, and Teal'c find him. They put him into a sarcophagus, which somehow un-Jaffas him. Well, business is about to pick up. They find Hathor back in the hot tub along with a bubbling stew of baby Goa'ulds. There's a big shootout, and Sam unloads a whole clip into Hathor, which somehow sets it on fire. As the room clears out, Daniel is left staring, and Hathor just climbs out of the tub, still on fire, and calmly walks out of a side door. Somehow she gets to the Stargate, programs in an address, and escapes to Chulak. Within seconds, all the dudes sober up and don't remember much of anything at all that happened. General Hammond puts in for both Fraser and Carter to receive commendations for saving the day.
All right, Jeff, talk to me about it. What do you think about this episode, Hathor?
I'm really glad this wasn't the Beowulf episode.
Me too.
But you know what this episode was?
Equally bad. I'm sorry, what?
This was the Lorelei signal from Star Trek, the animated series.
There you go.
Dudes end up totally under the sway of, in this case, one woman. Down there was a whole bunch of women. That episode, Lorelei signal, I loved. Uhura took command of the Enterprise, like bowled over everybody. She got Nurse Chapel and they basically got the women together to come in and clean stuff up. That's what this was. I love that I know about the sarcophagus. That's cool technology. I love it. It's a callback.
So that's new information for you.
It's new to me.
Yeah.
But not new to this world, right?
Right.
So that's kind of cool. And understanding, like, it's interesting to me how they're going to create this tie back to the movie. Like, how many more Egyptian gods are there that are either active, like Apophis, or might be dormant in the sarcophagus? Like, they can keep this rolling
for a very long time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the beauty of, hey, let's make a series out of this.
Mm-hmm.
We got unending amount of content we can go to.
Yeah. I mean, because like right now we've talked about Egyptians, but we know there's Norse gods that are part of this. And so it doesn't take much of a leap to say, oh, they probably have the Hindus and everything else. And the Hindu gods alone, that's a 47 season long story.
Yeah.
Like
the Greek gods, the Chinese gods, the Japanese gods, the Mayan gods,
it goes on and on.
Yeah. For sure. At some point, maybe even the Christian gods.
Yeah. I mean, why not? Get everything.
The Jewish gods, right? Yeah. Gods. Well, that's a monotheistic religion, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, who knows? Maybe Moses and Elijah and stuff were Goa'ulds as well. like maybe. Oh, here we go. Yeah. In fact, I'm going to talk about this because there's not a lot more to talk about in this episode.
He's not wrong.
Yeah. But like, so, you know, big deal in Exodus when Moses went up Mount Sinai.
Yeah.
And he got the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
Which I've got a fun joke for any of my government people out there. So Moses walks down with these two stone tablets and they're like, Moses, what's on those tablets? And he says, this is the law. And they go, that's it? Just those two tablets, those 10 things? Yeah, this is the law. And as he's saying this, the fog and the clouds part and you can see miles and miles of other stone tablets. Goes on as far as you can see. They go, but Moses, if that's the law, what's all that? And he goes, oh, those are the administrative rules and regulations. 2% or joke right there. But for me, that's hilarious. But maybe when he went up there, because he was up there for quite a while, like days, wasn't he?
Yeah. 40.
They goulded him.
Yeah.
Maybe. Or maybe it was before that, because maybe he needed that. I don't know. So it could be all the
time. You're literally writing like a whole season of SG-1 right now.
You can have it.
Yeah.
There you go. Writers, go crazy. I don't know. I don't really know what else to say. There were some massive plot holes in this that we talked about while we were watching it. The whole thing. So Jack gets pouched.
Yeah.
Which looked horrible. Like, what a horrible thing to happen. And Dr. Frazier, one point, shoves her hand so deep in that pouch. Right. It's like, did you touch his spine?
Right.
I have questions around the physiology of this. They put the pouch in place, but there's no more mass. It's just this X cut in your belly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where's the room?
Move your organs aside and stuff. I mean, but she referred to it as a womb. And I mean, for women, with their uterus and how that works in human births, there becomes a space to grow the baby.
The organs move.
Yeah.
The uterus pushes it out and makes its room. So yeah, maybe.
So, but you're right. She did stick her hand really far in there, you know. But, you know, what position does the Gould take, the baby Gould take in the pouch? And as it continues to grow bigger and longer, is it just sitting there curled up? Like, we don't know, we never will. And I'm kind of glad to not.
But I could imagine does the Gould like attach itself to the uterine wall in the pouch so it can like shoot out of the pouch and be like, bah! But it's not going to launch out because it's attached?
Have you ever seen a Gould come out of the pouch? Do you know how slowly that happens?
Yeah, but still, like, you want to make sure you're going to be secure. You don't want to, unless you want to break off.
Yeah.
Does someone have to cut the cord? But the thing that was wild about that is Jack lost his immune system. So we had this momentary, and by momentary, I mean about 14 second emergency of he's got no immune system. What do we, we'll just put him in we'll put him in the sarcophagus. Problem solved. Why was it even an issue?
Yeah, don't think about it. You'll drive yourself crazy. It's okay.
Okay, well, let me think about this one. Hathor's sitting in the jacuzzi, just teeming with Goulds. Sam comes around the corner, pop, 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 shoots her, and then it catches on fire. She walks out of the fire and into the Stargate, into our lives and out of our lives in just 40-some-odd minutes. Oh, Hathor, what could have been?
Mm.
I don't have a lot of thoughts on this one.
There's
another Gould, and she lines up with the myth of who she was.
Okay, so a few things you learned, though, just to pull the value out of this for you. You learned about the sarcophagus.
Yeah.
You learned about the concept that the Gould have queens and they birth them, the larva, which should have actually made sense. Mm-hmm. You learned that in doing so, they do need a little bit of the DNA of the host species to ensure compatibility of this particular group of larva. So she could mate with, say... Well, remember, you've already met the Unas.
Yep.
Right? The first ones. So James Earl Jones. There would have been some coded DNA for that particular group. But it just helps to... It helps. It's not necessary, but it helps to ensure compatibility when they do that.
I wonder what defines species. Because she was in ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
And was, you know, an active member there until she and Ra had their split. She should already have the human DNA.
Well, but she needs a new... DNA juice every time she produces a litter, a brood,
right? Yeah,
whatever. I don't know what you call that.
A bucket,
a jacuzzi tank.
Yeah, it learned some stuff.
Yeah,
but it's not complete, you know, and stuff. I'm repeating this for our audio listeners. We talked about it during the episode itself, but this is 1997. Buffy was in its heyday. I think Charmed was on TV during time.
That was a good show.
That was a good show.
Yeah.
And so like to have an episode, Spice Girls were all the rage. In fact, I saw the Spice Girls live in 1998. So not too long after this. Yeah, I did that. It's actually not a bad show, to be honest, but girl power was the rage, you know? And so,
I mentioned, earlier Batman and Robin, with Poison Ivy played by Uma Thurman, which was the exact same thing. Breathe on. You have this breath and it goes into mind control of the men, not the women.
But in both cases, Batman Returns, in this, you have a believable, threatening villain.
Yeah.
That's a woman.
Yeah.
That didn't really happen before this. Yeah, you know, I mean, if there was a female villain, she was weaker or was tied to a man or something like this. For the most part, I can't really think of anybody before that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, and I'm there may have been one or two. I just don't know.
I think about Superman 2.
I was literally just thinking about this too.
Deathwalker.
But even with her,
she had General
Zod. She was number two to General Zod.
So that's a big deal. And then, so really you had the men, and this is the same thing that happened in the Lorelei signal, but you have the men just being stupid. Women is the bad guy. And then women over here solving the problem. Yeah. And I felt like it's such a great bridge to bring us to a place where like in Star Wars today, all the new heroes are women.
Oh yeah,
and it's awesome. Like it works. We couldn't have that now if it wasn't for episodes like this.
Well, we've even seen this with Babylon 5 and how that, you know, you have people like Ivanova and stuff like that, and how they are an integral part of the story and where they're going and what's happening. So
an important time period, I think, you know, in the evolution of how we presented women on television. Those are my first time thoughts on this. Brent, did you happen to get any sci-fi messages out of this one?
Yeah, not really. Like I'm sure I could probably dig something out, but I'm not trying to, cause that was not the point of this episode. I got to tell you, Jeff, this episode is a hard skip for me.
Yeah.
Because personally, I find this episode gross. The whole thing with the water and the tank, like it's uncomfortable to watch. Yeah. I don't like it. I don't like that imagery in my head. I see this episode on and I immediately change the channel and I don't come back during commercial breaks.
Okay.
I don't. If I can't find something else to watch, then I turn the TV off and get up and go do something else.
Wow.
I'm not like last week, Fire and Water. Like I'll go check out what's on other channels. If I don't see anything, I'll come back to it. If I'm watching something else on another channel, when that goes to commercial break, I'll check in on Fire and Water. It's that sort of an episode.
Yeah. For me. Okay.
This one is nope, I'm out.
Yeah.
This one is I'm a complete out. I want to acknowledge that I am perhaps not finding, the message in this episode because of my own detestation, but I also don't really think there's a message. I'm giving it zero chevrons.
I'll just pause it just for the sake of discussion. Was the message that hey, women can contribute and are believable as both villains and heroes?
No, I don't think so.
I kind of agree, especially because there was the scene where the women were all locked up.
Yeah.
To get out, they didn't outsmart anybody. They used their sexual wiles to get out. Yeah. And almost the whole time they were in there, they were talking about
that. Well, let me poke the bigger hole in all of that, okay? Sam goes in, Dr. Frazier goes in, everything's happening. They still needed Teal'c to make things happen. Oh, and by the way, the only time when things really started turning the tide was when Jack came out of the sarcophagus. He grabbed a gun and started shooting everything up.
Then it turned everything around.
Yeah, because otherwise they were just sort of stalemated. Like they were kind of making it happen until the man could come back in. So yeah, no, I don't think at all that's what that was.
Should this be a negative one chevron?
We've never done negatives, and I don't necessarily care to start now. I will tell you this though, Jeff. The writers of the show would go on to say that this is one of the weakest episodes of the entire series.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in fact, they're going to make fun of it in a later episode.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
So just keep an eye out for that. I do remember, and I have not watched this recently to confirm it, but Richard Dean Anderson, I seem to remember in interviews, remembering this episode fondly and really liking this episode.
Yeah.
But he's looking at it through a shooting standpoint.
Yep. And as an actor, I think at this point, we're 14 episodes into this thing. So he's established his character. And here's a chance to be your character, but different.
Right.
And as an actor, that's super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
So, Jeff, I went zero chevrons. I'm not going to go negative. I'm not going to go that bad because, you know, all of that being said, I still don't think it's the worst episode. You know what I don't find? I'm not offended by this episode.
Okay.
This episode doesn't make me mad. It just makes, it's just, ew. That's how I feel about it. But, Jeff, you get to rank this episode in the 100% completely accurate and definitive ranking of season one of Stargate SG-1. Last week, I went from the bottom five to give you something. I'm going to do the same thing again.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. So our bottom five currently are, which I still can't believe Thor's hammer is in the bottom five.
All right. Right.
Right. But then there's last week's episode, Fire and Water. We have The Enemy Within, The First Commandment and Emancipation. Jeff, where do you place Hathor?
This is not a hard one for me at all.
Yeah.
This is better than Emancipation.
Yeah.
It is worse than The First Commandment.
Ooh.
This is our new number 12.
Yeah. I think I could fudge it and put it above First Commandment, but it's not going above Enemy Within.
First Commandment, maybe, but I think
I can make the argument for why it should be below or above.
Yeah. First Commandment, yeah. I think to me, like the separator, that's a solid sci-fi concept.
Yeah.
That was 30% of the original series of Star Trek was that kind of story.
Yeah.
So yeah, that concept's good. Horrible execution.
I will tell you what episode actually had better. That's a good grammar. Had better female empowerment message was Emancipation.
Yeah, right. Sam owned that.
Absolutely. When she took the fist, like when she got punched, right? She had that backhand or whatever. She took it like a champ.
Yeah.
Man, you know what I mean? And you know, where she got to assert her own agency and she helped that young woman also go for where she needed to go. I mean, Jeff, you could almost make an argument that Hathor should go under Emancipation. I think Emancipation just might have an overly bad rap. Like I don't know that actually Emancipation is as bad as the final slot.
Wow.
But I'm not doing the ranking. Yeah. You are, and you place it here at number 12.
Number 12.
All right. Well, with that, Jeff, that's going to do it for us for Hathor. Good news. We never have to revisit this episode again.
Thank goodness. Well, except for when they make fun of it, apparently.
Well, but then we get to laugh at that.
That's just
because we'll understand it and we'll
right? See what they did.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I'm not going to say we're never going to see the character Hathor again.
She did leave.
She did leave. Stargate. Yeah. So she's still out there somewhere. Our next episode is an episode called Singularity. Care to take a guess? This is a good sci-fi title.
Yeah, totally.
What do you think this episode's about?
This could be all kinds of things. I'm going to dig into my wheelhouse. There's a series that I'm a big fan of, and in it, there's the magic in it is called biotics, and there's a biotic power that's used called singularity.
Ooh.
And they launch this at their enemies, and it basically creates this focal point.
Uh-huh.
And anything that gets within a certain range of that focal point gets caught in it.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like this, got its own little gravitational pull, its own little singularity.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm talking about Mass Effect.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't know that yet.
Not yet. It's great. It's a great power in there.
Yeah.
But what I think this is going to be about, and I need to think about some specifics, but there's going to be something central and things orbiting around it and coming closer.
Yeah.
Here's what it is. So they're going to end up on a planet that, again, they didn't probe very well, or they probed it and paid no attention to what the probe said when it was there.
Yeah.
They're going to go on it and they're going to find out that, like, that sun's about to supernova, or there's a black hole that's pulling things inside of it. And for whatever reason, because it's moving, the Stargate coordinates are going to get messed up. And they're going to have to figure out a way to get back to Earth before the planet gets singularity'd.
Well, you're a good guesser.
Oh, well, thanks for that. I appreciate the generosity.
You are a good guesser. We'll see you next time. Just how right Jeff is right here on Stargate SG-1 for the first time. Hey, listen out there. Thank you guys so much for joining us in this episode. Wherever you're watching us, whether you're on Patreon, YouTube, you're listening to us on an audio feed, please find a way to like, share, subscribe, let people know about this show, Stargate SG-1. Meshing up the reaction bid with a podcast bit all together in one deal. And like I said, please share this video with somebody who loves Stargate or somebody who you know who needs to get in the gate, step through the gate,
step through the gate,
step through the gate
for the first time.
For the first time. So with that, until next time, thank you guys so much. We will catch you next time.
Hey, Brent.
Hey, Jeff, what's up?
I thought it was cool that Hathor is the goddess of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Because in my case, one out of three isn't that bad.
For crying out loud.